Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point, broadcasting live tonight from Invesco Field, Denver's Mile High Stadium, where the Denver Broncos play. Tonight, under a clear Colorado sky, this big stadium and the 70,000-plus crowd pouring in as I speak are all about Barack Obama. Tonight, the Illinois senator will accept his party's nomination and become the first African-American major party candidate in history to be nominated for President of the United States. His journey to this moment has been extraordinary. In 2004, Obama, then a little-known candidate for the U.S. Senate, delivered an electrifying keynote address at the Democratic National Convention in Boston.
There is not a black America and a white America and Latino America and Asian America. There's the United States of America.
After that speech, the headlines read, rising star for the Democrats. Just 4 years later, he is their nominee. Tonight, he will deliver the most important speech of his career. This hour, On Point, we are in the stadium. From Invesco Field in Denver, Barack Obama's big night. You can join the conversation. What do you need to hear, want to hear from Barack Obama tonight? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We will get a lot of great perspective tonight. Just a few moments ago at the podium on the 50-yard line where Barack Obama will stand later this evening, civil rights leader Congressman John Lewis was standing and speaking. Joining me right now at our broadcast booth inside Invesco Field, we're honored to be joined by Congressman James Clyburn of South Carolina. He is Majority Whip of the 110th Congress. Congressman Clyburn, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
What does this night mean to you, sir?
Well, it means a great deal. Sometimes it's hard to describe exactly what it means. You mentioned John Lewis. John and I met back in 1960, October 13th. I'll never forget the weekend, when we were organizing what became known as the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC. Mm-hmm. And we've been friends ever since then. We now serve. He's my senior House Majority Whip. We went through a lot together. A lot of times we sat in those jails, wondering whether or not what we were doing would have any real beneficial impact. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I thought about myself reaching adulthood, having children, wondering whether or not they would, in fact, have a better life than I was experiencing. Tonight seems to bring all of that full circle. It says to me that those prayers that I heard from my mother and father over breakfast every morning before going to bed every night seem to be being answered. And this, it means a lot to me.
It's the 45th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. He did not live to see this. Did you think you would, Congressman?
No, I didn't. And I think that if people were to focus on the substance of King's speech on that day, the I Have a Dream part of that speech was a closing, which he almost sat down without giving it to Mahalia Jackson to yell out to him to tell him about the dream. He'd given that that part had been said by him 25 or 30 times before.
But not on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial.
Not on the steps. It's all about timing. Mm-hmm. And that's why I bring it up, because if you look at that speech that day, he was talking about time. He was talking about the fierce urgency of now. He had just left a jail cell in Birmingham a few months earlier. He had gotten a letter from some white ministers telling him to leave Birmingham because they thought his cause was right, but his timing was wrong. And King, in his answer to them in that letter, which I think is the most timeless document ever written that I've ever read outside of maybe the Bible, he said time is neutral. It's never right and never wrong. But he said something very prophetic in there. He said, no, I'm coming to the conclusion that the people of ill will in our society make a much better use than the people of goodwill, use of time, that is, than the people of goodwill. And so what we have seen this year, I think, is that the people of goodwill, black and white, young and old, rich and poor, coming together, making real good use of their time. They have decided that the time for change is now, and the person to effect that change is Barack Obama.
Barack Obama often quotes Dr. King on just this phrase, the fierce urgency of now.
That's right.
Here he is.
That was that speech that day. A lot of people don't realize it. They
Absolutely.
Think that it's just a dream speech. The fierce urgency of now was given that day. That's in the I Have a Dream speech.
There may have never been a now like the now this evening for Barack Obama. What does he need to do? What's the first fierce urgency of this evening? He's pulled even practically with John McCain in the polls. Still some ahead, but very, very close. What does Obama need to do tonight?
I think he needs to draw a tremendous contrast, a broad contrast between himself and McCain. He needs to tell the American people, and the world for that matter, exactly what they can expect from his presidency. I believe that he has demonstrated time and time again that he is a very good orator. I think the time for that is not tonight. I think that Bill Clinton and his wife the night before, Senator Clinton, have teed it up for him. Tonight, he has to say to the American people, elect me president. Allow me to put the next government together. And this is what you can expect. He has to lay that out and contrast that with what they can expect from McCain, and that is what is going to be required.
How would you put in a nutshell the change that Barack Obama stands for, and do you believe the country is ready for it?
Well, it remains to be seen whether or not the country is ready for it, but I can tell you this. Barack Obama's impact on our country will be seen in every fourth and fifth-year-old kid out there. I used to teach school, and I can tell you, a lot of times when I was telling those kids to study hard, stay in school, play by the rules, you can be anything you want to be, I didn't really mean it when I said it. I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it. If this happens, they will believe it. That's the biggest impact that he would have on society.
Congressman James Clyburn, South Carolina's 6th District Majority Whip for the 110th Congress, thank you very much for
joining us. Thank you so much for having me.
Barack Obama taking a risk. A bold risk tonight in speaking to an audience this big. The Republicans have gone after him as a kind of celebrity who's great on the catwalk but not great on substance. He says he wants to keep it workmanlike, but there are very high expectations for this speech at the Mile High Stadium in Vesco Field in Denver tonight. He knows how to speak to big crowds. He's done it before. When he was fighting for his party's nomination, he had his sights on a big horizon then. He spoke here to a crowd of 20,000. At the Target Center in Minneapolis right before Super Tuesday.
Then I promise you this, we will not just win here in Minnesota, we will win this nomination, we will win the general election, and you and I together, we will change this country and we will change the world. Thank you, Minnesota. I love you.
Barack Obama, right before Super Tuesday. And, of course, on he's coming tonight, accepting the nomination of the Democratic Party for President of the United States. Joining me now in Invesco Field, Ryan Lizza, Washington correspondent for The New Yorker magazine. Ryan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Jonathan Kaufman, political editor at The Wall Street Journal. Jonathan, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Ryan Lizza, you have looked very closely at Barack Obama's life in Chicago, the kind of forge in which his adult life really came together. Yeah. There's been a lot of talk about the American people getting to know him this week. After all the time he spent on the trail already, many only begin to pay attention now. From what you learned about him, as Americans watch him tonight, what do you think are the most important things for them to know from his political biography?
I think there are a couple of things. One, I think that there's an impression out there that Obama is this naive young man who came out of nowhere and doesn't really understand this complicated game of politics. I think there's one thing that you learn when you study his record, when you study his time in Chicago, and that is that there's an inner toughness about this guy that doesn't always come through with some of the sort of superficial impressions. And some of it is Obama's own sort of his style. He's an intellectual in some ways. He's a writer, and he comes across as an observer sometimes, and he doesn't come across as a seasoned politician. When you look at how he actually got to where he is, he made a series of choices. There were a series of battles, a series of elections, where he showed a sort of disciplined. The discipline of a political brawler. And I think that the McCain campaign, if they believe that he is Obambi, in Maureen Dowd's phrase, they're mistaken. I think the other thing that people need to realize and to sort of remember is how far he has come in such a short period of time. And my favorite story to illustrate that is to think about where this guy was 8 years ago at the Democratic Convention in Los Angeles in 2000.
I think Al Gore's nominating
Al Gore's nominating convention. So everyone knows where Obama was in 2004. He gave that brilliant
in
speech.
In Boston. But in 2000, you paint it beautifully. We just got a couple minutes before the break. Put us there.
This is a few months after he came off a crushing defeat at the hands of Bobby Rush, a congressional race in Chicago. Mm-hmm. He was thinking about leaving politics altogether. Mm-hmm. His wife, who didn't want him to run for Congress in the first place, was not all that happy with him. Their relationship was on the rocks. He was broke. He was financially strapped, in debt because of his losing campaign. And a friend of his persuaded him to go out to Los Angeles to the Democratic Convention and do a little bit of networking, maybe get back in the game. So he found a ticket on Southwest, the low-budget airline. He made his way out to Los Angeles. Turns out he had a hotel, you know, on the outskirts of the city. He couldn't even get into the convention because he didn't know anyone well enough to get a pass. He goes to rent a car, and Barack Obama, 8 years ago, his credit card is rejected. Probably the low point of, certainly the low point of his political career, if not his life.
And he doesn't get in. And you describe him watching the convention from a parking lot. Somewhere.
Something like that. He's told the stories a number of times. I forget the exact circumstance, but that's right. And 4 years later, this guy is the star attraction at the Democratic Convention, which essentially launched his presidential campaign. That was the beginning. And now, 4 years later, the party is nominating him as their presidential candidate.
It is an incredible, incredible story. Jonathan Coffin, Ryan Lizza, please stand by. We're in Invesco Field tonight, where Barack Obama will give his big, big speech before 70,000-plus. And they're streaming by us right now. The excitement here is very palpable, and the crowd is very large. You can join the conversation. What do you want to hear from Barack Obama tonight? What big themes, what concrete plans, what emotional appeal do you need from this man? And is America ready to elect Barack Obama, son of Kenya and Kansas, Hawaii and Harvard, President of the United States? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Live from Denver in the Mile High Stadium, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from Denver, Colorado, tonight from Invesco Field, Denver's Mile High Stadium, where tonight Barack Obama, the Democratic Party nominee for president, gives his historic acceptance speech before a crowd of 70,000-plus, nearly 80,000. Behind me right now, you can hear Sheryl Crow, singer, rehearsing earlier today for her performance tonight. This hour, from the rim of the stadium, we are looking at Barack Obama. You can join the conversation. What do you want to hear? What do you need to hear from Barack Obama tonight? How about the giant stadium venue? Is this showboating, or is this opening up the political process, as Obama says? Democrats, is this your year for the White House? And Republicans, will you be tuning in to see what Barack Obama has to say? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I've been joined by Ryan Lizza, Washington correspondent for The New Yorker magazine, who has looked very closely at Barack Obama's Chicago years, and joined by Jonathan Kaufman, political editor for The Wall Street Journal. We're in the stadium. Let's listen to just a little bit of tape here from people coming in, flooding in to this very big speech venue tonight. Here coming in was Deborah Cape of Fort Collins, Colorado. She said she loves the openness of Obama's efforts.
I think he's been very inclusive in this campaign. I think you'll see people of all ethnicities and stripes and all backgrounds, and I think it's just a very inclusive campaign, and he wants to bring our government back to, for, and by the people, and this is the best way to do it.
There are big expectations tonight from the crowd at Invesco Field and around the country. Coming into the stadium, here's Jose Rosales from Louisville, Colorado.
I think there's definitely three things he needs to do, which is he needs to keep the motivation up. He needs to keep the levels, encourage other people to get involved. He also needs to talk about the issues a lot more, just because what I've heard from other supporters, that they just want to hear more about what his stance on the issues are. And also third, I think he needs to differentiate himself from McCain, say why he's different and why he's the better candidate and the right choice for America.
And here's 17-year-old Tim Glazer from Longmont, Colorado. He'll be 18 by Election Day.
I'm not, like, Democratic. I'm kind of Republican, but I don't know who to vote for in this election. It's like, McCain, I don't agree with most of his stuff, but I don't know what Obama's all about, so I'm just here to see what Obama's about.
17, soon-to-be 8-year-old Tim Glazer from Longmont, Colorado, and he's in the stadium tonight. Jonathan Kaufman, you hear that range of views, the openness people applauding there, the readiness from Jose Rosales to hear the issues, and then a young kind of Republican, maybe an Obama guy, Tim Glaser, but he's here tonight. He's here to listen. What do you think this moment represents, Jonathan?
Well, I think what we're really seeing here is, in a way, these enormous forces under the surface that have been developing over the past decades. You know, we focus a lot in the press on all the things that are wrong with race relations in this country, all the injustices, the poverty, and all those things are true. But at the same time, I think what we realize now is that we were perhaps measuring some of the wrong things. I was talking to a black delegate here recently, and he said, it's like the collapse of the Soviet Union. We were all studying the wrong things and missed the fact when this huge change came. And I think
the change that permits Barack Obama to be on the 50-yard line tonight before 70, 80,000 denominee.
And you look at these 80,000 people, and it's an incredible cross-section of the country. And so I think what you're seeing is that there were a lot of forces beneath the surface. I think that at work, for example, whites were encountering blacks at work in large numbers, and that changed some of their attitudes. The country was becoming much more diverse. Even John McCain now has a diverse family. He's adopted a daughter from Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. And I also think there was this impulse a lot of whites had coming from the civil rights movement not to be thought of as racist, to sort of reclaim the moral high ground. And so in a sense, I think Obama has tapped into all these forces that not only 45 years ago, even 25 years ago, during the very conservative 1980s, who could have imagined we'd be at this moment? But I think beneath the surface, so much was changing. And now you see them all pouring into the stadium, Obama about to speak to them. You know, I think we have to remember, even if Obama loses, that doesn't mean this is a country that's like it was in 1963. If he loses, he may lose by 2, 3, 4 points. I was just talking to David Patterson, who's the African-American governor of New York. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, he said, look, you know, 20 years ago, if you had told me we're going to nominate a black man for president, but he's going to lose, he said, I would have taken that bet in a second. I mean, who would have thought we would have even gotten to this point?
Win or lose, but he stands here tonight with a real chance of winning. Who knows? The next 9 or 10 weeks will tell the story. Jonathan Kaufman, Ryan Lizza, let me begin to turn to our listeners around the country. From near our home base in Boston, from Lynn, Massachusetts, Barbara is calling. Barbara, you're on the air to Denver. What do you see, Barbara?
Hi, Tom. Well, one of the things that I'm really looking to hear from Barack Obama tonight is, in addition to the inspiration and imagination for what's possible for this country, is really some practical approaches to overcoming the bankrupting of the Treasury and the spirit of the country that's happened in the last 8 years. So I'm really hopeful that tonight is going to mark the change, you know, a real turning point in this nation.
And you want to hear him describe from the 50-yard line how he's going to solve the national indebtedness issues. Do you think he can effectively do that in this venue, Barbara?
Well, perhaps not, but it would be nice to at least have a glimmer of hope that he has a practical plan behind all of the inspiration.
Yeah, it's a great point, and one that many people have in mind as they prepare to watch him tonight. Ryan Lizza, what about that combination of inspiration and, you know, elbow grease that it takes to get it done? Does it come naturally to him? He's mocked sometimes for his eloquence by Republican opponents.
Well, I feel like this is, we go through this cycle, you know, every month in this campaign. Mm-hmm. I think back to the primaries, right before the Jefferson-Jackson dinner. That was a big political moment in Iowa. And there was the exact same kind of complaints about Obama, that he was letting the race slip away, that Hillary Clinton was going to win this thing, that she was inevitable. And everyone said that he needed to have a big speech. It was a big moment. But what he really needed to do was get concrete, get specific about what he would do. And then it seems like he pulls that off. He tells people he's praised for it. And then he goes back to his default position of hope and inspiration. And he goes through another cycle where the pressure builds on him to get more concrete again. Everything that you're hearing from the Obama campaign tonight is that this will be a speech that includes two things. One, a contrast with McCain, so really laying out the debate, making sure voters realize that there is a major difference between these two candidates, and there is. And secondly, the phrase you're hearing from them is very specific. He will lay out, there will be some wonky details in this speech. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He will identify problems that people are struggling with and very specifically explain to them his solutions. So I think the caller's questions will be answered. At least that's what they're telling us at this point.
Let's take a call from Glendale, Maryland, and Catherine. Catherine, you're on the air to Denver. What's your question or observation?
Hi, Tom. Yes, we're just about 15 minutes outside of Washington, D.C., and I hope that I will go on a White House tour and see Barack Obama there. I think one of the things is that he's getting a lot of criticisms for his approach to the campaign, for being in the stadium tonight, for making preliminary appearances at the convention, but that's the whole thing. He's about change in many different ways, and the way he's running his campaign with no so-called red meat is one of them, and that's what the American people want, and that's why that stadium is full tonight. And I hope that he is able to detail some of his plans to quell the critics that are criticizing him for being style and no substance. So I'd like to see us take away some real tangible examples of the kinds of things he's going to do, and then following the convention, seeing those things play out and fleshed out.
Catherine, we'll bring that to our panel, and thank you very much for your call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Brian in Ventura, California. Brian, you're on the air to Denver. What do you think?
Well, I'd like to see less of the "it's the same as Bush" and more specifics of why McCain himself is a flawed candidate and would make a poor president. And I think he really needs to differentiate, as your guest was saying, specifically why McCain's a bad, bad decision to make.
Brian, let us pick it up. Jonathan Kaufman, does this candidate now, this nominee, formerly the nominee, does he have it in him to really lay into John McCain? He can come across as cool, very smart, and inspirational, no doubt. We've seen it in many settings. Can he lay into, tear the hide off, as people were saying last night in the opposite direction, John McCain?
I think he can lay into him, but I think he's also got to realize that McCain is turning out to be a much more deft candidate than I think a lot of us thought. He came out with the celebrity ads that were very critical, created a lot of anger in the Obama campaign and among Democrats. And one of the things we've just heard is that after this speech, McCain is going to be putting up a television commercial. And there was a lot of speculation in the press that he was going to try to step on Obama's great moment, was going to sort of go at him, break all the rules. Well, we've seen an advanced text of it, and it turns out it's a very gracious commercial, which basically says, "Congratulations, what a great moment for America." But I think Obama has to be careful, because the Republicans are very good at running campaigns, and they don't always go at things with one note. They're not always negative. I think McCain, because of his personality, can also be extremely endearing. And one of the things that the Obama campaign people are concerned about is that they don't want to get into a personality contest with McCain, because McCain has a very strong personality, a very appealing one. They want to keep it on issues. So I think that one of the things that I thought that John Kerry did pretty effectively last night, that Bill Clinton did, that Joe Biden did, was to say, we like John McCain, we respect him, he's a friend, but it's the issues we disagree on. So when you talk about laying into John McCain, I think that Obama has to do that, but he has to be careful that he doesn't come across as too hot and allow McCain to sort of rise above things as the great uniter.
800-423-8255. Let's hear from Wisconsin, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and Robin. Hi, Robin, you're on the air to Denver.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd just like to say that I'm very excited about Obama's campaign, and I worked for him for Advancing Wisconsin, a grassroots advocacy organization, and I heard him in the park on Sunday, only a mile and a half from my house, and go Obama.
Are you a Democrat, a Republican? Where are you on that, Robin?
Lifelong Republican that switched to the Democratic Party, and my grandmother in Prairie du Sac, hello, bud. She's going to be very happy that I switched, and my entire dad's side of the family is very happy.
Did you switch because of Barack Obama?
I did.
What about him?
He has nothing to say for himself. He's in the Army. I mean, who cares?
Robin in Eau Claire, thanks for calling. Let's hear Barack Obama's own explanation. He gave it before the DNC at the Pepsi Center here in Denver for why he chose to move the convention to Invesco Field, the stadium.
We want to open up this convention to make sure that everybody who wants to come can join in the party and join in the effort to take America back. I think we are going to have a great night tomorrow night, and I look forward to seeing you there.
Ryan, Lizza, how does this candidate, this nominee now, look at a challenge like this? How does anyone? It's 70,000, maybe 80,000 people. He's standing right there in the middle in a kind of raised circle. Nothing really about him, but thousands and tens of thousands of people. Does this give Barack Obama a cold sweat? Has he done it enough times now that he's cool as a cucumber about it? Tell us.
Yeah. I have been with him right before he was about to address an indoor arena, probably 1,000, maybe 2,000 people. Mm-hmm. I was shadowing him for the day for a piece I wrote once. And I talked to him, and what I was shocked at is he was seconds from going on to speak to this crowd. He had no notes, nothing. And he was jabbering away with me. There was a high school student there who was sort of there to meet him. He was talking to him and asking him very detailed questions about his life. He was checking his BlackBerry. He was dealing with a very negative story in the New York Times. And I looked at him and I said, do you ever freak out before you go on stage like this? And he looked at me like I was stupid or like I was crazy. And he said, as you say, cool as a cucumber, and said, something like, you know, once you've done what I did at the DNC in 2004 and spoken in front of that many people, you know, nothing is ever makes you nervous. You never get cold feet again. And he just had absolutely, you know, no stage fright whatsoever.
But Jonathan Coughlin, is that stone cold cool a full advantage here? I mean, people have been saying at some level, this is a very magnetic candidate, but some Americans and some Americans that he needs to win have not made that emotional connection yet. Is it part of the same picture?
Well, Abner Mikva, who is an early mentor to Obama in Chicago, a congressman there, has said, and he said it going back to in Pennsylvania when Obama made his comments about people being, working class people being bitter and clinging to their guns and religion. Mm-hmm. You know, he said Obama's problem is that he can be too Harvard and not enough Chicago. And I think that that's something that is a concern. I mean, everyone talks about the race issue and whether people don't like Obama because he's African-American. But I think another issue is his elitism, and that coolness can come across in a very appealing way. I think a lot of people, especially young people, respond to the kind of references to Jay-Z, the fist bump, the basketball court, this kind of cool as a cucumber affect that he has. But I think for other people, for older people, certainly for blue-collar workers, it turns out, they're a little put off by that. And race is probably part of it, but I think part of it is this arrogance and elitism that he clings to sometimes.
And yet, Ryan Lizzie, you described just 8 years ago him there, you know, kind of a broke in the parking lot, things not going his way. It's hard to see that as elite. What about the elitism?
Well, you know, elitism is, you know, in the eye of the beholder, I suppose. Anyone that went to Harvard Law School, I suppose, that, you know, you could classify them as the elite. I mean, let's be honest. We have two candidates here who are charter members of the elite in this country.
John McCain, son and grandson of admirals.
Exactly. He comes from a very prominent family. He married into the most one of the wealthiest families in Arizona. Mm-hmm. As we all know, he owns quite a few houses. Look, honestly, Obama up until a few years ago was a guy with loaded down with debt from his college loans, and was sort of taking one last crazy gamble on a Senate race. So is he an elitist? I suppose he is. I can't remember the last presidential candidate for either party that wasn't at some level a member of the elite.
Bill Clinton grew up humble, but there was that Yale Law School, that Rhodes Scholar stamp.
Exactly.
These are people of achievement, though, in that case. It's a meritocracy. I guess George W. Bush, a little bit different on that.
But, the point still remains that in American politics, especially at the presidential level, you do need a sort of connection, a sort of common man connection with voters, and that from time to time in Obama's political career has been a problem for him.
Let's go to Jack in Berlin, Connecticut. Jack, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I would like to see Barack Obama take more of a page of John F. Kennedy's "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you could do for your country," and give a more personal responsibility to people.
Personal responsibility, Jonathan Coughlin, is that part of his kit bag? Is that part of what he lays on the line? He certainly has done in some kind of controversial settings. Jesse Jackson came at him for asking more on Father's Day from African-American fathers.
Right. He's made those comments in African-American churches and in settings. And he talks all the time now about the fact that he turned down a job on Wall Street to become an organizer for probably $10,000 or $15,000 a year on the south side of Chicago. But I think the caller is making a good point. I mean, there is this sense, and you began to hear this throughout the convention, that America is at some kind of a turning point, that people are really, as Joe Biden kept saying last night, you know, knocked down. And they want to be maybe not only lifted up, but to pull themselves up.
A turning point, even a precipice.
And so I think that, you know, if Obama did decide to sort of ask people to sacrifice, you know, there might be something there. And I think especially for young people, I think, you know, there's been so much focus that we in the press have put on working class voters and older white women and Walmart women. We've sliced and diced that group into very thin pieces of salami. But part of me thinks that the Obama campaign, while it will try to win those people, is really betting on the African-American turnout and young voter turnout to turn the tide here. Even before Obama speaks now, they've been having people go out, make calls from the stadium to try to register new voters.
Right across from here, from us here at the edge of the stadium, they're at it.
And so I think an appeal to people's better interest to sacrifice will not only play well against McCain, but may also tap into that idealism of young voters and bring them out in large numbers in November, which would help him.
Jonathan Coughlin with the Wall Street Journal, Ryan Lizza with the New Yorker Magazine. Please stand by. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we're going to hear from the Republican Party on what they make of Obama at this stage in the campaign. You can join the conversation. Democrats, is this your year for the White House? Republicans, will you be tuning in tonight? Live from Denver and the Broncos Stadium, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from Denver, Colorado, tonight from Invesco Field, Denver's Mile High Stadium, where tonight Barack Obama, the Democratic Party nominee for president, gives his historic acceptance speech before a crowd of nearly 80,000. This hour, from the rim of the stadium, we are looking at Obama. Behind me right now from earlier today, Stevie Wonder rehearsing, warming up for the big night here. 70, 80,000 people pouring into this stadium. Add your voice to the conversation. What do you think? What do you want to hear from Barack Obama tonight? With all our racial history, what is the significance of this night for this country? And are you ready? Is this country ready for Obama, for a President Obama? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined by Ryan Lizza of the New Yorker Magazine and Jonathan Kaufman of the Wall Street Journal. With me right now from WBUR is political reporter Fred Tice, who's been in the stadium. What's the scene there, Fred?
The stadium is almost full now at this point, Tom. People are
about just a couple of hours now from Obama's speech.
Exactly, and you're seeing a lot of the old party nominees. Michael Dukakis is going around. People are, flocking to him, wanting to shake his hand. Earlier, we had David Plouffe come in and address
campaign manager for Barack Obama.
That's
yes.
Right. And it was kind of interesting because he seems to be responding to the Republican criticism of the use of this stadium. Mm-hmm. He said, we've been criticized for using the stadium. It makes our candidate look like a star. Well, it's not about that. It's really about bringing all of you in here. But it was interesting that he felt that he had to address that.
The tickets that went out online for the public snapped up within one day, I read. So there was a large demand here.
And they're trying to make use of this crowd here by telling them that they should, if they make 12 phone calls, they'll get a free ticket to Mile High Stadium.
There's been some Republican jabs about the little stage set. We should say there's a kind of a raised circle in the middle of the stadium, chairs all over the ground level. Behind it, some sort of Roman columns and stuff meant to sort of suggest maybe the federal style of Washington, D.C., called by the Republican Party the Temple of Obama.
Indeed, it looks rather more like a temple. I'm not sure how they'll feel about having used that that backdrop, but I guess we'll see.
Maybe on TV it won't be so very obvious. He's on tonight, and of course he will be introduced in part by Al Gore.
And one of the things if I may talk to you a little bit about mm-hmm. what I was talking to the delegates about, mm-hmm. You're saying that what do they want to hear? Mm-hmm. One thing that I'm hearing is they want Obama to be humble, which is kind of interesting. And they want him to be humble. These are Obama delegates, not
yes.
Clinton delegates.
Okay.
Because they the setting is rather grandiose. And so
so there's the challenge to be humble and yet fill a 70, 80,000 person stadium with enough inspiration to make it all sing.
And they also, the Obama people, want him to embrace Hillary Clinton because they want to channel that energy and get those Hillary Clinton people on board with them in unison to go out for Obama.
Get that party union maybe very literally here tonight. Fred Tice with WBUR, political reporter. Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Tom.
I want to get a little bit of Republican view right now of what's going on here. We'll do the same next week with Democrats. Joining us from Minneapolis, Frank Donatelli, Deputy Chairman of the Republican National Committee. Mr. Donatelli, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
We're very well. I'm sure you've been watching this convention closely this week. What do you make of the show and substance that the Democrats have offered here in Denver? And what are you expecting from Barack Obama's speech tonight?
Well, good show, as always, but not really a lot of substance. I don't know that the Democrats have really done that well in terms of defining what this word change is. They constantly talk about change, but I've heard very, very little about what direction they would really take the country besides raising taxes, which I believe that's one promise they will keep. But the other thing is that last night was supposed to be the night that we heard about Senator Obama's credentials to be Commander-in-Chief. And we heard a fulsome speech, what else, by Senator Biden, and we heard a pretty good one by former President Clinton. And I really didn't hear a lot about why it is that somebody that's been in the Senate for 2 years and prior to that, a pretty undistinguished career in the Illinois legislature, is all of a sudden qualified to lead our country in these dangerous times. So,
Bill Clinton said he has the tides or winds of history on his side. You're critical of the change theme. You say there's not enough meat on the bones of it. At the same time, what is it now? Something like 80% more of Americans say the country's headed in the wrong direction. Doesn't that suggest that a change theme might have some pretty strong legs?
It does have strong legs, but remember, John McCain is the number one reformer in America. I mean, I like the term reform rather than change. Change doesn't really mean anything. Change to what? Reform means that you understand what the problem is, and then you want a solution to try to make it better. John McCain is not a status quo candidate. John McCain is a change candidate. He has differences with the way things are currently being run. He differs on spending. He differs on how the war in Iraq was fought. He fought to change that and to put a new policy in place, which is now being successful. He fought to reform institutions in America. So we'll take the change mantle on right away. But what we say is that if you're going to change something, you have to have some understanding of what the institution is. With all due respect, we don't think Senator Obama does, but Senator McCain certainly does.
Frank Donatelli, Deputy Chairman of the Republican National Committee, thanks for checking in with us from Minneapolis tonight. We'll do it just the other way next week. Thank you for being with us, Frank.
Okay, thanks a lot.
And joining us right now from Denver on the line, Laura Washington is here, columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. Laura, thank you very much for joining us.
Great to be here.
You know Barack Obama and Michelle Obama well. What do you expect from him tonight? Can he meet all of these expectations, some of them contradictory? Be humble, but fill a stadium with inspiration.
Well, you know, he's really set a tall order for himself. He's got to, as was mentioned earlier, put the meat on the bones. And he's set up a very emotional moment in terms of just the incredible staging, the 75,000 folks who will be shouting his name, the whole change mantra. And in the midst of all that, he has to break through and tell his story, tell his personal story, because too many Americans still don't really know who he is or really get who he is. And he also has to talk about what that change means. He has to talk about policy. He has to talk about specific policy changes that he would make and what's wrong with Washington and how he would fix it. That's a huge order. But he's also been, you know, known as a very effective speaker, and he's got this charisma, I think, that can carry him pretty far. There's this connection that voters seem to make with him, which I don't even completely understand, where everyone sort of sees what they want to see in him. They African-Americans see an African-American hero. People of different races see someone who's speaking up for them. The younger generation, of course, is crazed by him because of his youthful looks and his youthful attitude. So everybody is applying and absorbing. They're like sponges absorbing what they want from him. So it's an incredibly risky thing in what he's doing tonight, and if he can pull it off, it'll be historic.
Laura Washington in Denver with the Chicago Sun-Times. Laura, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, John.
Ryan Lizza with me here in Invesco at Invesco Field in the stadium. Barack Obama has described himself, with nuance, as a blank slate. What does he mean by that?
Well, I think he's very conscious of the fact that a lot of his popularity and his fast rise has to do with voters during what, for a lot of liberals and Democrats, has been a very dark 8 years. He's very conscious of the fact that people are projecting their own hopes and aspirations onto him. And they're, like Laura said, they're sort of they're assuming that what Barack Obama wants for the country is similar to what they want. And I think when he's talked about that blank slate, I think that's exactly what he meant. I think the other meaning is that he's the new guy in this election. So he's the guy that you have that the voters have the least information about. That's both a curse and a blessing for a political candidate. On the one hand, you have what the consultants call, you know, low negatives. People don't know all the bad things about you. Mm-hmm. So you have a chance to fill in that blank slate with lots of positive things, which I imagine he'll do tonight. On the other hand, it gives your opponents a great opportunity to define you on their own terms. If Barack Obama loses this campaign, I think that a lot of people will look back at the last 2 months since he wrapped up the nomination and say that he missed an opportunity there, that the long, drawn-out primary plus the last two months were the moment when he needed to tell everyone in a rock-solid way, repeated over and over again, who he is and what he stands for. The fact that we're still having that discussion is a bit of a political problem for the campaign.
Jonathan Kaufman, if everyone is projecting, or many people projecting, what they want to see on Barack Obama, how does he seal the deal with individual voters? I mean, he's got big support out there, so there are a lot who are not holding those questions, but he still needs that margin of victory. You hear Frank Donatelli, the Republican, saying he doesn't have the experience. He doesn't have the experience, and you know that theme will be ridden all the way through these next weeks to November 4th. How does Barack Obama seal the deal?
Well, I think there are two things. One is the specifics. I think that there is kind of a hunger out there to say, well, you know, give us a 3 or a 4 or a 5-point plan about what you're going to do about veterans or about the economy. He's certainly done it with Iraq. But the other thing is you know, we talk often about how Obama needs to make people understand him. But I was talking to one of his advisors yesterday, and he said, you know, Obama also has to make people feel that he understands about them, that he can cross this chasm somehow. And you see him trying to do it now in his television ads and sitting with some, you know, white middle-class family
earlier
in the middle of Missouri to watch
City,
Michelle.
Yes.
And some of that is staged, and some of it seems forced. But I think trying to create that connection that, you know, Reagan was terrific at, Bill Clinton is terrific at. This is McCain's great strength. I mean, everyone does want to have a beer or watch a football game with John McCain. I think a lot of people would like to hire Barack Obama as their lawyer or have him as a teacher, but I don't think they're quite sure that he gets them. So I think it's both not just talking about his own personal story, but also making it clear, as I think Michelle Obama tried to do on Monday night, that he understands where they're coming from, even though he maybe has come from a different place.
We're told he studied the acceptance speeches of JFK, of Ronald Reagan, of Bill Clinton in a Chicago hotel room in preparation for this night. Let's take a call from Santa Barbara, California, and Susan. Susan, you're on the air to Denver.
Hello, Tom. My high school daughter has been in Denver this last week at the convention, and so I've been really tracking it quite closely. One of the conversations that we have, particularly when we hear the Republicans talking down about Barack having the strength and courage and the presence and capability to speak in front of 78,000 people, we see it as a tremendous irony that the Republicans would say that this is not a good quality to have.
Yeah.
The gentleman before was speaking about having a beer with the guy, but I think the American people want to have a leader of the free world who's articulate, who's intelligent, and has the ability to inspire the people of the United States.
It is ironic in some ways to see him criticized for being so popular that he can fill a stadium of that size and hold that crowd. Susan, we take your point exactly. Thanks for calling from Santa Barbara. Let's get a call from Washington, D.C., and Steve. Steve, you're on the air.
Yes. I'm actually from Texas, but I'm in D.C. right now. And quite frankly, I've always voted for Republicans, but have been increasingly disillusioned with politics as usual. And when Obama came on the scene, it just kind of gave me a renewed sense of hope in the whole system that everyday people could be listened to and could make a change. And so I hope he, you know, emphasizes that tonight.
There's a Texas Republican who sounds like he's ready to go for Obama. Steve, thanks very much for calling. Let me get one more from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Tony, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to say that I am a supporter of Barack Obama, and the reason why is because I have taken the time to read his book. I have followed him on the campaign trail, and in fact, I have read his plans, which are on his website. And I wanted to point out that those who say that he is not specific and does not have plans, no meat on the bones, I think it's unfortunate that these people have failed to educate themselves because the plans are there. And I just want to say that it's unfortunate that many people in this country educate themselves based on 30-second sound bites and 30-second attack ads.
And go out and read it on the website. You say, no doubt, it's Obama.com. Hear it tonight from this stadium when he speaks. And, Tony, thanks for that. Let me get one more call here from St. Petersburg, Florida. And Robert, you are on the air, sir.
Yes, thank you very much.
I wanted to say that I am 86 years old. I am retired. I am a World War II veteran. I was a tail gunner on a B-24 bomber. I have not been this excited or this committed to a presidential election since the election of Harry Truman in 1948.
What is it about Barack Obama, Robert, that makes you feel that way?
I can't really tell you except everything. For one thing, obviously, I want to get the gang out of the White House that's in there now. I am a Democrat and a committed one. There is something about the fact that this man has stood up and has committed himself and his wife and his personality to this campaign that has inspired me, and I hope it's inspired a lot of other people.
World War II tail gunner, not so inspired since Harry Truman. Jonathan Kaufman, it really is history that we're looking at here. It's right in front of us. Whatever happens, whether you're for Barack Obama or a guest, quite a moment in American history that's going to unfold right here behind us in just a couple of hours. Really something to remember.
Yeah, and I think that while there is a political campaign here, and it'll be a very tough one, I think it is a way to, in a sense, pat ourselves as a country on the back that we have gotten to this point, and to recognize, I mean, you talk to people from other countries. I was just in China, for example, speaking about the election to Chinese students there, and they sort of come up to you. I mean, this is unimaginable in their country. And I said, you mean that a black man would become president? And they said, no, that an ordinary worker person, you know, the son of a single mother. I mean, Obama does really epitomize that American dream. And I think whatever happens in the campaign, you know, it really holds, I think, a very positive mirror to the country and to the strides that we've made. And whether he can seal the deal or not, I think in the end may be a political calculation, although it may also show us, you know, some of those deep racial animosities that are still there. But I'm struck on both sides. You talk to Democrats and Republicans. I mean, I'm sure that if there is a way to bring out race, that the Republicans will try to find that, and they want to win the election. That's obvious. But at the same time, I think there is a sense, even in the McCain camp, that this is a historic moment, and that whatever happens, the distance that we've traveled from 63 or from 1980 or even from, you know, 4 years ago is really remarkable. The one thing I wonder about sometimes is you have to wonder if we've almost been gripped by this fever. I mean, I found myself when Obama won the nomination thinking, as Ryan has pointed out, I mean, 4 years ago, he was a state senator. And this is the kind of thing, if you wrote this as a proposal for a novel, somebody would say, oh, well, you know, no one's going to buy this. So I think we all hope that it turns out well. But you have to wonder, you know, how extraordinary is this moment, and can Obama live up to it?
Well, it looks pretty real tonight with the stadium nearly full, headed for 70,000, maybe north of 70,000. Jonathan Kaufman, Wall Street Journal. Ryan Lizett with The New Yorker Magazine. Thank you so much to you both.
Thanks for having us.
Live from Denver and Invesco Field, the Mile High Stadium, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.